Cool.
Excellent. Okay. Welcome back to OddPod. It's been probably about 2.5 years since our last new episode, but it's time to start talking to musicians again. So I had a really delightful time interviewing Anita Velveeta of the Minneapolis scene, and we talked about her new album, Western Amphibians, which came out about, I want to say a month before this podcast comes out. So you're going to hear our little conversation, and then at the very end of the episode, you're going to hear a song called Put Me in My Place from Western Amphibians. Just a little disclaimer, since I'm out here on the road and my gear is a little bit different now from what it would normally have been, there is a little bit of a crackle in my mic while I'm being cavalier and waving my mic around while I should be talking directly into it. So if I sound a little janky, that's why. So apologies, and please bear with me while I relearn how to host a podcast properly. So anyway, great to be back. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you love this interview. Okay, so I'm here with Anita Velveeta, which is quite possibly the greatest stage name ever, I have to say, because, I mean, first of all, rhyming. Second of all, there's cheese involved. Mm-hmm. I have no notes. 10 out of 10.
Thank you. I had to pick something I was true to my Midwest roots. So cheese.
Yes. Yes. I feel that. I'm on board with that. Western Amphibians. So I've really been enjoying the album. Started listening to it a couple weeks ago. And I would say, at least to my ear, stylistically and, you know, in terms of dipping into what people would interpret as different genres, you cover a lot of bases. I feel like there are some moments that feel very much like kind of like pop punk on steroids, one way to put it, and like more, you know, very much heavier, like metal going into like halftime feel, mm-hmm. and then even some stuff that's a little more like country.
Yep.
Do you recall like who all you were listening to kind of when you were writing these songs?
Yeah. So the country influence definitely comes from like really just taking like a nosedive into outlaw country from like the 70s.
Okay.
So lots of like Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Johnny Paycheck, and just like really, really identifying a lot with that, especially Willie Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
I was also just listening to a lot of like fifth wave emo, like a lot of new stuff that's been coming out now, like Weather Day, and just like a lot of shoegaze revival, like Julie. I tried to incorporate just like everything I was listening to at the time. I was also getting into like house music a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried to incorporate some of those elements as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the diversity of sound or diversity of genre, and also literally just like timbrally, you have stuff that feels very like what I think of as a bright sound, very like seltzer bubbles and TV static, and then you have these other tunes that are very much what I think of as like a very warm lo-fi kind of sound, and I love the range speaking of which, in terms of production, is that pretty much you making all of those decisions? Do you collaborate with people on the production end?
A little bit. Okay. So I guess like the whole like process kind of, because I don't want to discredit any of the amount of people I work with. Like as much as I want to say like I'm self-produced, what I'll do is I'll have an idea for a song, I'll write the song, and then in my head I'll have an idea for like the instrumentation and the production qualities, but then I'll end up working with musicians who can play instruments better than I can. And
you know what? We can't do, like, nobody can do everything.
Exactly. Okay? No, no. You know, it's like a video game. You put your skill points into different things. Mm-hmm. Hours and hours of guitar practice is something I did not do. But I have lots of friends who are great at guitar. So I go to them and I tell them kind of what I want, and then they play something. And then I tell them, no, not like that, or that's perfect.
Yeah.
And then I took that, I kind of did a rudimentary like mix and production, and then I sent that to my homie Abe Anderson, who is kind of a legend here in town for mixing and producing. And in collaboration with him, we kind of came up with some like artifacts and textures that went into like the tones of everything. So I'd say I'm like 75% self-produced, and then like 25% of my friends really helping me out.
That sounds very reasonable.
Yeah.
Like I said, no one person can do everything.
Exactly.
Maybe Prince sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, there definitely are some great albums made by one single person. And that's just not how I like to make. Maybe at some point I'll make music like that. Some of the tracks on there are just me.
Yeah.
But I like to work with friends.
You know what? I think that's a good way to be. I definitely, for sure, and not to like bring this back to me too much at all, but like I do feel like while sometimes there are certain things that you're like, okay, I know how I want to do this. I know how I want this to sound. Let me just do it myself.
Right.
I feel like I definitely feel a little bit more like heartwarmed heartwarmed when I, you know, have worked with other people and I collaborate and
right.
It's much more of a group project.
Yeah.
I know that you got into more like DJing mm-hmm. kind of stuff, which is not, I will readily admit, not a world that I am super well versed in, but with your experience in getting into DJing and getting more comfortable with it, more familiar with it, and just kind of that world, do you feel like that's had a profound impact on how you approach producing, songwriting, and even like more specific things like pacing within your songs and song structure?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fairly new to the whole world of electronic music. It's mm-hmm. something that like I've kind of dove into in the last year and a half or so. So before that, you know, I wouldn't have been able to tell the difference between like techno and house.
Right.
But I think that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that carries over when making like songs versus like tracks. And maybe this is a pretentious distinction of the two, but I remember hearing this, like, I think it was Miles Davis quote about like, you know, you don't call jazz pieces songs. They're pieces or they're numbers or they're tunes, but they're not songs.
Yeah.
They're a whole different thing. I think like electronic music, tracks are different than songs.
Okay.
So like understanding how tracks work has helped me understand how songs work, even if it's like a kind of understanding the differences between the two. And maybe that's what's helped the most, is understanding what makes a song as opposed to like what makes like a techno track. And it kind of helps make both of those.
Yeah. Speaking for myself, not necessarily knowing the like nuanced differences in terms of different parts of electronic
yeah.
music, when I listen to tracks like which one was it? Hold on. Not Into Hookups, Just Into Jungle. Yeah. Sorry. Which one was I just
There's a lot of
to?
Tracks on there.
Yeah, it is like you're getting a lot of album for your money.
Yeah, 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 no.
I will say that. So when I listen to tracks like Not Into Hookups, Just Into Jungle, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this feels very like electronic. Like I said, like the Seltzer Bubbles and TV static
yeah.
a little
yeah.
bit. That very much made me think of like your sort of like DJing influences and that kind of thing. And it does, I'm like, oh, this is not a song, this is a track.
Yeah.
and Miss Him So is, I mean, very different from Not Into Hookups, Just Into
yeah.
Jungle. Also, I mean, it feels very like a club beat.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's what I was going for. It's just in the middle of nowhere.
It takes me back a little bit to like childhood Best Buy purchase of like Club Mix the 90s, like two
absolutely.
CDs.
Absolutely. No, I was going for that vibe. So I'm glad that comes through.
I love it very much. How did you, was there sort of a catalyst for your wanting to explore DJing and electronic music? Or was that something you'd always had kind of a side interest in?
I've always kind of had a little bit of interest in it as like a listener. Mm-hmm. But I think it never really like clicked into like a deep dive like other genres like country and emo have.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard this album in 2019 called Charmed by DJ Sabrina, the Teenage DJ. It's a great name.
Oh my God.
It's genuinely a top 10 album of all time for me.
Oh my God. Okay. I have
and
to check that
it
out.
It got me super into house music, mm-hmm. which got me into other types of electronic music. And I was always into like sample based music like Jay Dilla's Donuts, mm-hmm. and the Avalanches and Daft Punk. But
yeah.
That album, it's like it's 3 hours long of just like it's so good. I recommend it to everyone. But it got me into it, and then I started making some nightcore edits of a Nickelback song while I was at a family Thanksgiving I didn't want to be at. So I was just doing it as a coping mechanism.
Wow. I mean, understandable.
Yeah. But I posted a bit of it on my Twitter and people still like really like it. And
oh
I was
my
like,
God.
I think I can capitalize on this. So.
Yeah. That's just that concept to me. Like you said, a nightcore edit of a Nickelback song.
Yep.
That speaks deeply to me. okay. We're gonna backtrack.
Okay.
We're gonna take a detour to your EP that came out last year, mm-hmm. Biblically Accurate Fursona.
Yep.
Which great name.
Thank you.
you have a knack for names.
Thanks.
So I was listening to Incel Rock.
Yeah.
And I mean I enjoyed the whole EP, but that was the song that really stood out to me, and especially like sort of combing through the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
To my ear, and correct me if I'm wrong, my impression of kind of the feel of this song is that its subject matter is dealing with kind of a feeling of wanting to disengage from the misogyny that's mm-hmm. sort of baked into the music industry, this business, but at the same time feeling like you can't.
Mm-hmm.
Just yeah. for the sake of like having a career and making a living.
Right.
Can you, and you can go into as much or as little detail as you want. Is there some context here that yeah. you'd like to explain?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I wrote that song when I was so a year and a half ago, I was doing a lot of recording for bands.
Mm-hmm.
And I was recording a band. I mean, I'm not going to say who they are, but, right. They, you know, were this kind of punk band that wrote a lot of songs while they were still in high school and wanted me to record them. And so I was recording the songs and, just when you're recording and like producing for another band, you hear the songs over and over again.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing the lyrics and I'm just, they make me want to vomit because,
yeah.
you know, just sounds like high school brats.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, but then I just keep telling myself, like, no, I have to finish this. Like, I gotta eat, you know, I gotta pay rent.
I have to live.
I have to live. And so dealing with that, like, you know, what am I supposed to do here? And so I think that song was just, like, my coping mechanism of getting through that situation. But, I mean... Yeah, I want to talk about the song more, I guess, because like the band did come out after that song was released, and they messaged me and they were like, "Hey," I was like, "No."
You're like, "What? When do you want?"
Yeah, they're like, "We listened to your album; it's really great, and Incel Rock is without a doubt our favorite track, and you really helped us like." See some things in her own music. And so, like, I applaud them. It's like,
oh
one of
God.
The reasons why I don't play that song live is because, like, I don't know. They're off the hook. You know, if you can change, you know.
That's
cool.
That is really surprising to me.
Yeah, you're telling me I was so
pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I was very amazing. Surprised.
Yeah, I'm glad that it's like there and that kind of moment and that feeling is very much captured and mm-hmm. preserved. But yeah, I understand you're not wanting to play it live as much for sure. It is a great song.
Thank you.
On a larger scale, sort of zooming out from that particular experience with that particular band, mm-hmm. in terms of your thoughts about that sort of baked in misogyny and how you feel about recording, are you actively recording other bands that much?
Not really.
But in terms of like producing and just as you navigate the music industry, have your feelings about it, have they changed at all? Have you drawn any new conclusions since you recorded that song?
It's just as bad, yep. if not worse than when it's not just one band, you know, like, there's just misogyny is so rampant in the music industry and like, I don't know, people like men in the industry will just treat women like they're idiots. And like, I think a perfect example of it is a sound check. And like any woman who has ever done a sound check will know exactly what I'm talking about. And just like, there's been so many times where like, especially on this last tour, like I got extremely upset with the sound guy. Mm-hmm. That they'll just be running around with a chicken with their head cut off, not knowing what to do. And I'm like, cord right there. It's not plugged in. Cord right there. And then just ignoring me. And then... Right. You know, the band after me will go up to sound check and it's all cis dudes and they're just, you know, laughing and having a good time. But, you know, I get a shorter sound check and what I'm saying is not being listened to. And, you know, that's so frustrating. And just like, that's the kind of shit that like keeps women from being in this industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's why like producers are... I don't know the exact percentage, but I know it's over 70% are men. I think it's over 80%.
When you said 70, I was like, that doesn't seem high enough.
It doesn't seem high enough. No, I think it's like, it's an absurd number, that, you know, you do not see women in that position. And the best sound people I've ever had have been women consistently. The best sound people I had on my last tour and the tour before that were all women or non-binary folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is very much a goal of mine to, I think when I ran this podcast in Chicago, I think I at one point was trying to like seek out women who were specifically in sound, like in production more actively to get them on the podcast. And I never could or like couldn't make contact with it, you know, like it's, you do what you can, but it is very much a goal of mine to have more women like in sound talk about their experiences because it's just like... It's rough.
Right. Like, I can't imagine being a woman sound engineer or a live sound engineer and, like, the type of shit that cis male bands will tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine dealing with that every night after night. Like, nope, not for me.
Yeah. I hear you. Okay. yeah, it's hard not to just be, like, kind of angry all the time.
No, for real. Like
with your track Incel Rock, there's a point where it's like you go into more of a feel that's like chuck and chuck and like like a little bit like hyper country feel and it sounds slightly silly. Like mm-hmm. I hope that's okay.
No, my music's very silly. I have lived that.
It feels sort of silly in that moment and it definitely speaks to the feeling that I have of like I just joke about it all the time because you gotta laugh to keep from crying.
Right. you know, if they're gonna do their whole song and dance, I'll do my song and dance.
Yeah, exactly. You will not begrudge me my song and dance.
Yeah.
So, as a Minneapolis-based person in the music industry, do you feel like there's some specific way, and, you know, I am an outsider very much, like, I don't know what the scene is like here mm-hmm. in terms of... both like major venues or more like DIY stuff. Are there some specific ways that you feel like your approach to you know, whether it's songwriting, performing, recording. Do you feel like any of those have been affected specifically by kind of how the Minneapolis scene is?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Like, some of the best bands I've ever seen, actually the best band I've ever seen in my life, has been in Minneapolis. They're a band called Grandma, mm-hmm. and they're a three-piece hardcore band, but not like most hardcore. There's like a certain type of hardcore in Minneapolis that's like, it's like bouncy hardcore. It's great and just makes you want to jump up and down. And they're the best at it, and they do so good. I just played a show with them like last week, and it was in a garage in South Minneapolis. No, it was in Como. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was just like, I haven't had this much fun at a show since the last time I saw Grandma. And it's just like, they're so like hugely influential in just how I perform, the type of music I listen to, the type of music I write. Mm-hmm. But not just them. Early Eyes, who I toured with in January, who are from here, like touring with them and watching them work and getting to watch them demo out some tracks on off days. It was like, it was a masterclass, and influenced me like enormously when I came back and started writing again. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Anita Velveeta, I would not exist. My music would not exist or be where it's at without the community of amazing musicians we have here.
Yeah. So to sort of circle back to Western Amphibians specifically, first of all, can I know I keep bringing up names, but names are important. How did you settle on the name Western Amphibians for this album?
It's my really good friend Forrest, who designs nearly all of my, anything that has art on it, he has pretty much designed. He had this painting, which I used for the album art. And that, actually, the first time I ever met him, he was working on this painting. And I was like, that's a cool painting. That's kind of how we like met and started talking. And yeah, he recently finished it and put it in his portfolio. And the name of the painting was Western Amphibian. And so I was like, I'm going to make it plural. And now it's mine.
So no. We are all actually little frogs in cowboy hats.
Yeah. So the name purely comes from Forrest. So
I feel like it also, I mean, just given sort of the little like nods to country that are sort of sprinkled throughout the album, like it makes sense that there's like, you know, a little froggy partner.
Yeah. It's silly. It's goofy. But that's, yeah, you know, kind of the type of music I'm making, you know. It's like, it's not satire or parody, but it definitely, it's like, it's pastiche, you know. It's like, it's satire and parody without trying to be funny or mocking it. It's like a genuine imitation, just mm-hmm. because you like it so much.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things I think about this, about your music, is how there is, I mean, there's for sure, like, what was the song I was just listening to a little bit ago? It was the last track, Love Vertigo, mm-hmm. which is so pretty.
Thank you.
It feels, I mean, there's like these sort of like lush string moments in there as well, but it also feels very intimate at times. And so there's kind of that sincerity, or what feels like sincerity to me. And you have that juxtaposed with all these other moments that are like very much embracing silliness and goofiness. And I just love that it's all in there together. You know, you're not trying to be like, oh, this is like comedy music or anything like that. It's just very much, I don't know. It all feels really real. And yeah. I mean, for lack of a better way to put it, but that's a little reductive. But
no, I mean, that's what I was going for. Like, I think my favorite music is the music that captures the entire human experience. Mm-hmm. And like, I can't remember the last day I had where I didn't at some point laugh, where I didn't at some point want to cry, where mm-hmm. I didn't at some point feel really angry. Or feel in love, and like that's life. And so if you're just gonna focus on one of those things, I think that's cool, because you can really like dive into the intricacies of that. But with my music, I want to try to capture it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. I also feel like I have to shout out the track Malort Flavored Mouthwash in honor of my Chicago roots. Yeah. And your experience in Chicago. Is that, you said that you were living in Chicago for a little mm-hmm. bit. Do you feel like this track was inspired by that time?
You know, not really. Not really. I think probably in name only. To be perfectly honest, sometimes there's a lot of thought and stuff that goes into.
Sometimes there's not.
Sometimes there's not. I thought Malort flavored mouthwash is a really funny name for a song.
It is.
And I didn't have a song name for this one, so I was like, it's Malort flavored mouthwash.
I love
Chicago, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm biased. I love Chicago. I love how certain musical moments and song titles and that kind of thing can be, it's kind of like people's tattoos. It's like maybe it has some meaning.
Yep.
Maybe it's just a silly little guy.
Yeah,
like.
Exactly. Exactly. That is, I love that way to put it.
So when people are approaching this album, I know we said there are 14 tracks on this album, 14 lovely tracks or songs. And or songs. now I'm really watching what I say, tracks or songs.
I use them interchangeably too, even though I have a distinction.
I tend to say tunes for like everything.
Yeah, no, I mean, for real, like they're words that are meaningless and both meaningful at the same time.
Yes. So if you were to pick, let's say, three tunes from this album to sort of represent like, okay, if you're going to get like sort of a sense of the album overall. If you were going to recommend three tunes for somebody to like start with, just to get an idea, what would those three tunes be?
Put Me in My Place, Agoraphobia, and Miss Him So.
Yes. I like those choices.
Yeah, I think I'd go with those three.
They're very cool.
Probably the most different on the album.
So, now that you have this album out, I know you just played, before this interview, it was last weekend, that you played, like, a couple shows. Do you have, like, two more shows kind of coming up in the next 2 months or something?
I'm done with shows for April, but
for
I'm
April,
playing
okay.
Four shows next month. I'm playing the 17th, May 17th at Mort's with Prairie Clamor, who are pretty freaking dope. And then at the 18th with at the Treasury with Fend and Thank You, I'm Sorry, who are very good. And Abe, who mixed and mastered and co-produced my album, plays in Thank You, I'm Sorry. So, and Fend, actually. Abe's going to be working that night.
I love how much like sort of cross-pollination there is in terms of just people playing in all these different bands.
Yeah, there's like seven musicians, you know?
Just seven musicians playing in all
in like 10 bands. Yeah.
So what are some things that you're looking forward to that you're able to talk about in terms of performing, recording, any like writing stuff on the horizon?
Yeah, lots of, I mean, just, I'm always working on stuff. So I have a nightcore album, that like Nickelback nightcore thing I was talking about. I made that into like a full 35 minute album.
Yes.
That's dropping on 420.
Yes.
Yeah. It should be a lot of fun. It's you know, I think I was talking about like I try to make music that captures the whole human experience, but not with that one. That one's just silly. it's just silly. But I had a lot of problems getting, it was supposed to come out the same day as Western Amphibians, but it got flagged for copyright.
Oh, because
there's
okay.
Like, you know, 70 samples on the album. Yeah. But it was just a Daughtry song that was keeping it back.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. So I took out the Daughtry song. So on Bandcamp, you'll get to hear the full track with the Daughtry at the end.
Yes.
But yeah, so that should be out on 420. And then tomorrow I'm going to go meet up with some musicians that I've been jamming with and kind of flesh out a new album that I booked a release date for the album. So I probably should have the album come out by then. I booked a release show for it. Uh-huh. So like July 9th or July 8th, sometime in July, that album should come out.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And then I got tour in October, which I can't really talk about a whole lot other than that I'm going on tour.
Okay. That's so exciting.
Yeah. It's going to be the fun year. Year of the Velvet.
Year of the Velvet. Oh my God. I love that. Before we wrap up, is there anything else that you want to like plug or mention that I just haven't touched on?
Trans rights or human rights. Oh, yeah. Stream my music. Buy a t-shirt if you feel like it.
Wait, how do we buy a t-shirt?
Oh, Bandcamp. Bandcamp. If you go on Bandcamp, you can purchase merch. And Western Amphibians doesn't have a physical release yet, but I'm working with some people to do vinyl, which should be done this summer. And then I should have cassettes done like next month.
Yes, lovely. And Western Amphibians is not on your Bandcamp, correct?
Currently, it is not on Bandcamp because I'm waiting for the to do the cassettes.
Got it. Okay. But you can find that on like pretty much all major like streaming platforms. Yeah. And then you can find like all of your other stuff on anitavelveeta.bandcamp.com.
Yep. I'm doing the opposite way.
You know what? Do it whatever way you want. Know. There are no rules anymore.
No rules.
We used to all release things on a certain day of the week, and now it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Doesn't.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. This is like such a special interview for me to like be able to meet somebody in another scene and to be like starting the podcast up again.
Yeah, so I'm gonna do this.
I really appreciate your taking the time.
Absolutely.
Yes.